has it been polite over giving it twice?
Is that why he says it? Did it polite? Why is it twice?
When people say, come, come.
Oh, come, come. So yeah. To encourage him, right? So then here it says that Brahma heard the sound, tried to find the speaker, looking everywhere, but he couldn't find him. See, again, by his own search, he didn't do it. He thought it wise to sit down on his lotus seat firmly and give his attention to the execution of penance as he was instructed. So somehow he knew that this was an instruction. Then Prabhupada says, now notice the use of the word success in this purport. This is typical Prabhupada. One should follow the example of Lord Brahma. So here's again the parampara, right? The first living creature in the beginning of creation. After being initiated by the Supreme Lord to execute tapasya, he was fixed in his determination to do so. You see, he did this with this what was it called? It was in the previous verse, the avyalika ratta. So this fixed in his determination. So he understood that it came from the Lord. Because he was the only... Who else is there? He's the only one around. Prabhupada mentions in the beginning, first canto, first chapter, first verse of Srimad Bhagavatam. And they kindly give you a link. So if you forgot it, there it is. Tene Brahma Hrida Ya Adhikavaya Yanti. This is in the heart of Brahma. He revealed Vedic knowledge, Tene Brahma, Buddha, to who is the Adi Kavi. Amuyanti goes somewhere else, right? So Brahma gives the Adi Kavi, he got this in the heart. Buddha. Okay, remember that? It says first story, so that's right in the beginning of Bhagavatam. So here it says initiated from the Lord from within. It's interesting, there it says within, here it says, you know, that, well, at least the tapa came from outside, but the mantra was within the heart. So Prabhupada mentions how he does it in the heart because he's there as the super soul. And he initiated Brahma because Brahma was willing to receive initiation. Remember the phrase they use a couple, the desiring devotee? He's willing to receive initiation. He's earnestly and inclined to be on the path. The Lord can similarly initiate everyone who's inclined to have it. But then says...
What is it?
Hmm?
What is it? The Lord can... Similar initiating
anyone
who is inclined.
Yes.
He can do it.
You don't
know he can. Huh?
Without spiritual master.
Well, let's read the next paragraph, okay. When Prabhupada wrote this, he was thinking of somebody like you. As already stated, Brahma is the original spiritual master for the universe, and since he was initiated by the Lord himself, the message of Srimad Bhagavatam is coming down by disciplic succession, and in order to receive the real message of Srimad Bhagavatam, one should approach the current link or spiritual master in the chain of disciplic succession. After being initiated by the proper spiritual master in the chain of succession, one should engage himself in thinking in the discharge of tapasya, in the execution of devotional service. One should not, however, think himself, just because he's a Russian, on the level of Brahma, to be initiated directly by the Lord from inside, because in the present age, no one can be accepted to be as pure as Brahma. Right? So there it is. You can memorize that sentence. And then he mentions that the Brahman who gets the posture, you're really already elevated. You're the most pure being. So you cannot be expected to be treated by like Brahma and receive it directly. But one can have the same facility. Now, so notice he says this, the same facility through the unalloyed devotees of the Lord, through scriptural instructions, as we see in these two books, and also through the bona fide spiritual master available to the sincere soul, otherwise known as the desiring devotee. The Lord himself appears as the spiritual master to a person who's sincere in heart about serving the Lord. So, how is that sincerity? Because Krishna is in the heart and he sees whether someone's really desirous. And if he's really desirous, somebody comes. You know, I had this experience and it wasn't subtle with me because I was in graduate school in religious studies and was reading the Bhagavad Gita for about the third time, another translation. And this time I figured out that what the Bhagavad Gita was saying was surrender to Krishna. I thought it was my original discovery because there are all these all my teachers. My first teacher of Hinduism in the university was Swami Nikalananda, the Ramakrishna Mission. He was the uptown Swami that Prabhupada was in association with. And he used to come down to Philadelphia and teach at the religion department because he translated the Upanishad. So he was a Bengali. Then the second one was a Professor Chakravarti, another Bengali. And he used to say, Atman and Brahman are one. And then Mrs. Dasgupta, the widow of Surendranath Dasgupta, the famous Bengali scholar of Indian philosophy. I had three, you know, all Bengalis, and all completely Mayavadis. So when from Mrs. Dasgupta's class, you know, I was reading that, I finally figured it out that Krishna, that Bhagavad Gita is actually teaching surrender to Krishna. It was my breakthrough, you know. I thought, now really, I thought, wow, nobody knew this, but, you know, I figured it out. And I wanted to do it because I had such respect for the Bhagavad Gita. I sat there and I went, surrender, surrender. You know, I looked up and nothing happened. But I, you know, it's just within a month, I'm walking on campus and I hear ding, ding, ding. This is 1969, right? Ding, 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 ding. And I was thinking, you know, I'm going to have to go to India and find a guru. What a mess that is, you know. And then, you know, it just showed up. It's just so far out. You know, it happens like that. So if there's some... I didn't believe in God, but I was praying to the God I didn't believe in to give me faith to believe in him. So this is sort of that people find themselves in this situation. So there's some desires there anyway. So Krishna makes this arrangement in the heart.
How can you be in a department of religious studies and not believe in God?
How can you? Nobody believes in God, man. If there happens to be a theist in the department of religious studies, it's like a scandal. What's wrong with him?
What's the point of the dharma?
Huh?
What's the point of the dharma? To show how silly religion is.
Yeah. It's the science of religion. To historically study it as an interesting human phenomenon. Anyway. Prabhupada said, in your country there are so many departments of religious studies and I want that our men should head them up. That's what he also said. So we're making some progress in that direction. I tell you, within 15 years, there's going to be a freak out at the number of devotees who are scholars of religious studies. Because, they're going to have to keep them out the way they used to have to keep out Jews and stuff like that. You know, it should be fun. Yeah, therefore the bona fide spiritual master who happens to meet, though that it's not really by chance, the sincere devotee should be accepted as the most confidential and beloved representative of the Lord. If a person is posted under the guidance of such a bona fide spiritual master, it may be accepted without any doubt that the, here it is, the desiring person has achieved the grace of the Lord. So now, this is an interesting verse. I especially like the way in the Sanskrit you see this phrase toward the end there. Atapyata sma kila loka tapanam tapas tapiyam stapatam samahitam. There's a lot of tapas in there. You notice it? Prabhupada translates this, Lord Brahma underwent penances for 1,000 years by the calculations of the demigods. He heard this transcendental vibration from the sky and accepted it as divine. Thus he controlled his mind and senses, and the penances he executed were a great lesson for the living entities. I guess that's Akila Loka Tapana. Know what it is? You paying attention?
Yes.
Okay. Akila Loka. Tapana means enlightening, word for word. Thus he is known as the greatest of ascetics. So there's some interesting points in this. Yeah.
What's the duration of in Brahma's kind that 1,000 years value? That's not his style of music.
Divyam. When they say a divyam years, it means of the demigods. In other words, one divya year is 360 earth years.
Right, so this 1,000 years, that's 1,000 this year?
No, 1,000 the demigod years.
Which is how long is it?
360,000 of our years.
How about his years?
His years are different.
He's asking you to calculate.
Right, that's
about
how...
I don't know. You can do the arithmetic. You know, you can sit down with the calculator and you can figure it out.
Give me the equation and I'll do it.
I don't know. You can figure out the equation too.
It's not meant to
be. Because you know that one day of Brahma is you know, so many millions of our years. So you
okay. All right. I'll look it up.
Okay. I don't know. It may have been fairly short by his standard.
Because he only had 100 years.
He got a homework assignment.
Oh, right there.
Lord Brahma, this math, this arithmetic is wrong. I don't know how this happened. Because one celestial year is equal to 6 times 30 times 12 times 1,000 of our years. That's not right. A celestial 30 times 12 is right. But not the 6 and the 1,000, maybe is 1,000 celestial years. You see, in the Shastra, the names, like the durations of the yugas are given in divya years. Like you'll see it written that Kali Yuga is 1,200 years. That's what it says. You can even read old Hinduism textbook to say Kali Yuga lasts 1,200 years, you know. And then the next, this is Kali Yuga, the one before, is just twice that. And then 3 times 12 is what, 36, and then 48, right? And then if you want to get earth years, you just have to multiply by 360. And then you get the numbers that we have. That's how we're quick. Because here you can see the pattern. Multiples of 12. So this is a divya year. So that's why I don't know about this, how this arithmetic got this way. Uh, But it's, somebody can check out and see if there's some special thing, but that's what Divya year is, the celestial year. It's 360 of our years. Lord Brahma heard the oracle, but maybe it means something different with him. I don't know. And I have no idea how these numbers come about. The six. But see, the word is Divyam, and Prabhupada says Divyam, pertaining to the demigods in the higher planets. So see, that's Divyam, at Brahma's. So Brahma heard the occult sound. He calls it occult. Maybe because the person who vibrated it was unseen. Because occult literally means hidden. Of course, it has this other idea, you know, being sort of dark science. So he didn't see it, but still he accepted it as instruction. And he did this because he calls it his correct, pure vision of the absolute nature of the Lord. He had pure vision. And what was that pure vision? A correct vision, no distinction between the Lord and the Lord's instruction. There is no difference between the Lord and the sound vibration coming from him, even though he is not personally present. There's a long passage in the fourth canto of Bhagavatam as part of the discussion of the allegory of King Paranjana. When the king takes birth as a queen and her husband the king dies and she grieves. And Prabhupada says allegorically this is about the passing away of the spiritual master and how a disciple should behave. So there he discusses at great length what to do. And he talks about Vani Seva, serving the order of the words of the spiritual master. And in that way, actually it's identical with having the super soul appear in the heart. And that one receives direction from Krishna, one sees the Lord. So here is the same idea. There's no difference between the Lord and the sound vibration coming from him, even though he is not personally present. So now we're going from mantra as being none different from the Lord to the Lord's directions, what to do, tapa, as also being none different from the Lord. And so by serving the directions of the Lord, one is actually in the association of the Lord. This is what Mahaprabhu said to the Brahmana Kurma. If you follow my instructions, you will never leave my association. Even though I'm going away, you'll still have my association. The best way of understanding is to accept such divine instruction and Brahma, the prime spiritual master of everyone, is the living example of this process of receiving transcendental knowledge. So the potency of transcendental sound is never minimized because the vibrator is apparently absent. Therefore, Srimad Bhagavatam or Bhagavad Gita, which has so many, we're hearing Sukadeva Goswami, we're hearing Vidura, we're hearing Rama, we're hearing Krishna. In Bhagavad Gita, we're hearing Krishna. Or any revealed scripture in the world is never to be accepted as ordinary mundane sound without transcendental potency. One has to receive the transcendental sound from the right source, first thing, accept it as reality, second thing, and third thing, prosecute the direction without hesitation. This is the asceticism, this is the tapa, you do it without hesitation. Brahma did not hesitate. The secret of success is to receive the sound from the right source of a bona fide spiritual master. And so there's two things that don't, mundane manufactured sound has no potency. One time, every year, the Beatles used to make a little Christmas greeting for their fans, and one year it went, Merry Christmas, Merry Christmas, 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 Merry, Merry. It did. I heard it. That won't work. It's not only the manufactured sound, but it's from the wrong person. And seemingly transcendental sound received from an authorized person also has no potency. One should be qualified enough to discern such transcendental potency, either by discriminating, that is, say you can tell, you got some powers of judgment here, or by fortunate chance. You're just lucky. You have no discrimination, but you just stumbled into the right place. The disciple, however, must be ready to execute the order of the bona fide spiritual master as Lord Brahma executed the instructions of his spiritual master, the Lord himself. And here again is Prabhupada referring to this purport by Bhishma Chakravarti that we talked about. Following the order of the bona fide spiritual master is the only duty of the disciple, and this completely faithful execution of the order of the bona fide spiritual master is the secret of success. Yeah?
We see any cases of success or dissemination of Vedic knowledge outside of Parampara?
You see what?
Do we see any other cases where Vedic knowledge being given out and distributed or received outside of
Parampara? I don't know of any. Do you, anybody think of one? I mean, if you look for the fact that before Prabhupada came, the Bhagavad Gita was known in English since I think the 17th century, 17th or 18th century. It was translated into English and was around. And by the time Prabhupada came, there were lots of translations. And people were reading them. You know, Emerson liked it. Thoreau liked it. They said, you know, interesting things about it. Did anyone become a devotee? It doesn't seem to have the potency. I can't think of any where actual potency is there. Because again, it's a process of receiving something and conveying it. If you don't receive it, the three things, you have to have the person who has it, you have to receive it properly, and you have to convey it properly. It just has to be there. Yeah.
This example or this statement of the or following the order of the spiritual master.
Yeah.
Does that mean that if a disciple receives an order from a spiritual master, and then and he tries to execute the order, then actually success is not really the issue?
That's true. Success in the sense of persisting in following the order of the spiritual master becomes a success. Even because Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur in the purport said, once you just make this order the same as your life, it's your sadhana, it's your sadhya, it's also your sadhya, it's your practice and the goal of your practice. And he said that you don't care about success or failure. The success is just doing it. Prabhupada said, I was in New York when Prabhupada said that one should go out with a desire to distribute thousands of books, but if even one goes out, you should not be disturbed. This is not what the BBC likes to tell you. But Prabhupada is saying, if for some reason or other you're doing everything sincerely and it doesn't happen, you're just supposed to keep on going. And that's success. And we see this with Prabhupada, you know. He tried so many different things. First in India, and there was no success. And when it came to America, it looked like it wasn't going to work either. Prabhupada used to look at the sea when the ships were going back to India, because he just thought he might have to go back. So he didn't, but it came out because Krishna just made it. And Krishna's in charge of timing. You have to understand that too. If Prabhupada had come to America in 1955 or something, I think it was the right time.
There was this bubble in Bharati who came, you know, made like opened one or two centers and made a handful of disciples.
Yeah. Something more. Yeah. There was somebody who came before Prabhupada, it's true, in Bodhi Raja.
What is
when?
Bhanma.
Yeah, Bhanma. Well, yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah. To America.
I think Bob Maharaj came to Canada after Prabhupada was here already.
How this fortunate chance comes about? When by discriminating you can choose the master?
Either by discrimination. If somehow or other you have some good sense. And you know, maybe good intuitions. This guy is phony, this guy is for real.
The second one.
We
don't believe in chance.
Well, but you know, fortunate chance sometimes means Krishna guides you anyway, or it may mean that you just received causeless mercy. You have no deserving, you have no interest, but somehow or other, you walk by some devotee, someone gave you a samosa, you ate it, something. You know, I don't know. You just received. I mean, causeless mercy means you don't deserve it. There's no punya karma. There's no. That happens.
It looks like it happens most of the time.
Maybe, yeah, probably. Lord Brahma controlled his two grades of senses. What he means here is the karmendriya and the ganendriya. The knowledge-acquiring senses and the acting senses. By means of sense perception, sense organs, that's what he's talking about. To engage the senses, both of them. And then Prabhupada points out that controlling the senses means engaging them in the transcendental service of the Lord. So of course, once Brahma saw the Lord, then he went to work. He was not inactive. On the contrary, he was a guna avatar for Rajaguna. He was very active. And we have a description of all those things later on. So Prabhupada says, the execution of the order of the bona fide spiritual master descending into succession is factual control of the senses. Such execution of penance in full faith and sincerity made Brahmaji so powerful that he became the creator of the universe and therefore called the best among the tapasvis. Now we come to the final text for this evening. The personality of Godhead, thus being very much satisfied with the penance of Lord Brahma, was pleased to manifest his personal abode, Swalokam, Vaikuntha, the supreme planet above all others. This transcendental abode of the Lord is adored by all self-realized persons, freed from all kinds of miseries, sankleśa, they're freed from, Prabhupada calls this sankleśa, the five kinds of material affliction. We'll discuss those. Free from all kinds of miseries and fear, free from the fear of illusory existence. Vimoha. Sambhasam. So Prabhupada says here, you may ask, what was Brahma doing sitting on a lotus? It doesn't look like bhakti yoga to me. But if he saw the Vaikuntha planets, it had to be. This is what Prabhupada is saying. Otherwise, you cannot get there. But here it is. Here's what he did. He's the model. He's the really, in the strict sense of the term, he's the paradigm. You know, he does this, and he shows us how it is done, and he's the model on which we are also to conduct our own research into the absolute truth. This is what happens in science. Somebody has a breakthrough how to do science and becomes an established, this becomes an established way of doing things, and then many generations follow in the footsteps of that person. It really, really works by the same principle. There's good evidence for this in the history of science. So a research tradition. Somebody does something, Isaac Newton makes certain discoveries, has certain ways of looking at the world, and then for years afterwards, everybody follows just like him and explores what he's done further, takes the principles and apply them in different places and time. Now we're following, the scientists are following Einstein, and they'll keep on doing that until they find out it's wrong. And then there'll be some new discovery and so on. But here, Brahma's is the paradigm or the prototype of Krishna consciousness for us. But as far as being smart, he's the creator of the universe. That's quite beyond any material scientist is right now. Yes.
Basically, the tenets accepted by Lord Brahma is controlling the senses and concentrating the mind. That's it.
No, his penance is doing those things, but actually, he's also engaging in positive devotional service to the Lord. I mean, internally. I mean, everything that we do with our active senses, if it so happens that we cannot do it with our active senses, they can be done in the mind, and they're just as powerful. But if you have the senses, you use them. So first his penance is there, but he remains committed. He sees the Lord, and then he creates the universe. That's also penance. Because he says later on, it is by penance only that I create. I mean, penance becomes, and it's actually by penance that the Lord produces everything. That's what, no, it's the Lord says it to Brahma. He says, by penance I create this universe. So then the word tapa, penance, starts to take on the deeper meaning of the Lord's potency. Is his Atma Maya. And that when we perform penance in the sense of austerity, which really means only to put ourselves within the control of that potent energy, then whatever we do becomes an extension of Krishna's energy. So later on in this chapter, this you can see a fuller development of this word penance, like that. Yeah?
I've heard that the greatest penance we have to undergo is to chant Hare Krishna chanting.
Yeah, well, that's tough. Yeah, that's what Prabhupada is, that the penance is very similar. It's to follow the order of the spiritual master. So he gave us a number of instructions, and one should be developed, be dedicated to following those things. That's really. It is not that we have to lie down on a bed of nails. They do that. I've seen pictures, you know, of some yogi who held his fist closed like this, and you can see his fingernails coming up through his skin. Yeah, all kinds of things. You know, that's not what we're talking about. I mean, Bhagavad Gita says that kind of stuff is demonic.
Can I ask about this entering Vaikuntha Loka? This one account of Durvasa Muni entering Vaikuntha Loka and how he actually offended the devotee, and anyway, yeah, he was granted access.
How did he get in there, huh?
Yeah. And also he got in there, but he was in anxiety. He really had troubles.
Well, maybe he wasn't there really. Maybe it's for the purpose of a pastime, Krishna let him in, even though he's not qualified. Yeah. He didn't. Could it's like going to the moon? They may have gone there, but they couldn't stay. He couldn't. <go. laughs> He couldn't stay. So here, Prabhupada says. After telling some of the good effects of bhakti yoga, he says, executing bhakti yoga is exactly like sitting on the lotus sprouted of the abdomen of the transcendental personality of Godhead, for Lord Brahma was seated there. And then there's some place other people, the transcendental abode was revealed to, like Garga, Rishi, and where the abode of the Lord is.
That's the Prabhupada name is supposed to be more advanced than Nibbivaka.
Huh?
That's the Prabhupada name that's supposed to be more advanced than Nibbivaka.
Then Yajnavalkya?
Yeah, that's the one that I was saying. Vidya Gosha brings her up as an example.
Oh, to Gargi, yeah, the Gargi is a lady. Uh-huh, that's true.
Yeah.
She was more advanced than Yajnavalkya. That was her husband, right?
No, there's two Gargis. The one is, and one Gargi is actually her nickname. Her name is Maitreyi. That's Yajnavalkya's wife.
Uh-huh.
The other Gargi was just this Brahma Bhavani who was there in this biggest sentence.
This
sages,
right here.
And is said to have been the most learned of all the sages there.
Uh-huh.
And this is actually, Prabhupada calls it Garga Upanishadism, but this is actually Brahma Bhavani Upanishad.
The Brahma?
This citation that he's giving here is from the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad.
Oh, the Brihadaranyaka.
Yeah.
So anyway, it's described there, that's sometimes described by historians as the earliest Upanishad, because maybe it's an Aranyaka, a Brihadaranyaka. Okay. Here, the word swadhistavadibhihi is very significant. One who has actually realized his self realizes the transcendental form of oneself. He's like, see who I am. The self-realization. And then he discusses what we've already have considering the material conception. Now he says the material body is overcast with five kinds of miserable conditions. Ignorance, well, here's the list, I've found them. Here they are, the five miseries. Prabhupada doesn't mention them very, in fact, I couldn't find any other mention them easily. Now these are the ones, avidya, asmita, false ego. That's another way of saying false ego. See, asmi, I am, and ta, I am this. False ego, asmita, raga. Here, not a spiritual attachment, but desire for material happiness. Dvesha, the opposite of raga, hate. Abhinivesha, and when he says absorption of the body is the basis for sense gratification and fear of death. I don't know why this little dudette is here. Okay? Those are the five.
I guess they're probably most well known from the Yoga Sutras.
Yes, they come from the Yoga Sutras, that's right. Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentions that. He has them in his poem of his, a song of his.
I think he had seen them somewhere else if they had the same people reading the Yoga Sutras.
This is from Madhurika, don't they?
It's actually not.
This one?
Yeah, but not in the actual text.
They're added by the translator.
Yeah, they're not actually there in the original text. They're added by both translators, actually. Because they're in the Hindi commentary.
Uh-huh.
And so the both translators who translated it put them in.
Now, Prabhupada goes to quote the beginning of the Chintamani prayers. The revelation of Krishna Loka. He segues into it. The personal form of the transcendental Bhagavad would explain in the following verses. Brahmaji also describes the highest planet of Vaikuntha Loka as Goloka Vrindavan, where the Lord resides as a cowherd boy by keeping transcendental Sarabi cows and surrounded by hundreds of thousands of goddesses of fortune. Yeah, I want you to point something out to you about this verse. It's describing a simple domestic scene, right? Woods means you're away from civilization. Forests, houses, cows, and milkmaids, right? Cowherd boys, all these other things. But here it says that those houses, the building material is Chintamani. So there's lots of houses, but the common building material, the brick, is Chintamani. Here's lots and lots of trees. There are forests, savanna, a jungle. But each one of those trees is a kalpa, vriksha. Now the thing is, there's kalpa vrikshas in the heavenly planet. If you get one kapha vriksha, you're a made man. You get everything you want. Here, there's a forest of them, right? And then they're herding the cows of the Surabhi, but each cow is a Surabhi cow. Again, one Surabhi cow, you got it made. Remember the Bhagavatam, there's a big battle over a Surabhi cow. Right? People fight wars over these Surabhi cows. And here's a huge herd of them. And then if Lakshmi Devi happens to, you know, as she appears in the material world, the materialist, just stop by your house for a little while, you've got it made. Lady Luck drops by, and suddenly all your adventures come true. You win the state lottery, you know, all these things. One Lakshmi briefly, but here there's hundreds of thousands of Lakshmi. So although this is a simple rule scene, it's got hidden opulence like crazy. You want to point this out? It's a very far out verse. What it's saying, because it's Vaikuntha, but it looks simple. So Prabhupada then ends this by saying, the Lord is known as Vaikuntha, and his abode is also known as Vaikuntha. Such Vaikuntha realization and worship can be made possible by transcendental form and sense. So there's full perception. If you want to visit there, you have to have a spiritual body, and you want to see it, one has to see it with spiritual senses. Okay? Yeah.
There's a discussion one day in the temple, this Kalpa Vriksha in Vaikuntha and Kalpa Vriksha in Goloka Vrindavan has the same potential. But in Kalpa Vriksha in Vaikuntha, whatever you desire, they can give. But Kalpa Vriksha in Goloka Vrindavan, whatever you desire, they don't give it. They give it whatever is necessary for your devotional service. And by contemplating the Kalpa Vriksha, whatever you desire, they don't give it. What does that mean?
What does that mean?
I always heard that Mother Mangala goes to the Kalpa Vrikshas in Vrindavan and asks for ladders for himself.
I don't. This is beyond my realization. Yeah.
So members of the Brahmi Sampradaya, and in your opinion, did Prabhupada see Krishna face to face? In your opinion, did Prabhupada see Krishna face to face?
Yeah. Oh, he said so. People asked him, "You have seen Krishna?" Oh, he would say different things. He said, "Yes." And what does he look like? Papa pointing the page, just like that. And then another time, somebody asked him, "Have you seen Krishna?" He says, "Yes." And he says, "And so have you." Guess what? Have you seen the sun? Have you seen the moon? Thinking of the universal form. Huh? And so like that. Yeah.
In relationship to the system of Parampara, we discussed a few days ago, those six systems of philosophy.
Six?
Those six systems of philosophy, Jain, like that. Do they have any connection or relationship to Brahma within the Siddha succession? The yoga school does.
I don't know anything about those Siddha successions. You said the yoga?
The yoga school. Patanjali is actually just the sort of modern guy. The yoga school was supposed to have been established by Lord Brahma himself. But the acharyas commenting on Vedanta Sutras point out that, well, Brahma can sometimes be in Lujan. And that's why he originally established the yoga school.
So they are relating to and connecting.
That the yoga tradition traces itself back to Lord Brahma, and that seems to be generally accepted. That's what he's saying.
But he wasn't illusioned when he created it. The other systems are just based on.
I don't know. I mean, I really can't say. I'm sure if you look at the Karma Mamamsa text, they'll give a parampara, and I'm sure it'll go back to somebody.
Jaimini is Vyasa's direct disciple.
Is whose?
Vyasa.
Okay.
And he was given one of the Vedas
before?
Yes, that's right. It's mentioned he is, actually. He's mentioned in the Bhagavatam.
And that's why, the actual sutras aren't atheistic. And it's only with Shabara and Kumari Labhata that it became atheistic. But the actual original Purvamimamsa is incomplete, but not atheistic,
yeah.
But at least all of them, they had to have their sort of Vedic Sampradaya.
And then we have our Kapila Dev and Pseudo Kapila. That's an interesting case to make sometime. The real Kapila was first, and the Pseudo Kapila is who he is. Because everywhere you look, you see presentations of these. They always give the atheist to some kid. Always.
Okay.
You had a list of those five qualities.
Yeah.
Characteristics on the, or the fourth one.
I'd like to see it again.
Yeah, the fourth one is hatred, aversion.
Dvesha, yeah. Icha, dvesha, aversion or hatred.
Happiness. What's the difference between anger and hatred?
Short-term and long-term.
What's that? Sanskrit anger is
used.
Krodha. Yeah, it's got a different word. Aversion. See, if you could have dvesha without anger, I suppose you can have anger without dvesha too. That's pretty hard to do, but
anger seems to imply some kind of specific cause.
Yeah.
We learned it, Bharat Bihari Prabhu was teaching us that anger is actually a secondary emotion. It's always a product of some other emotion, and it can be many different emotions. It could actually be happiness. It could be distress, it could be, but it's always secondary. It's always the kind of
this based on his understanding as a mediator and.
I think it's coming from the author of the worship too.
Huh? So is it from, is this a Shastrika?
I don't know, it's what that Rauda Rasa is, the Gauna Rasa?
Okay, so thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada.
Jai.
Yeah, well, that's what they said in the temple, but I don't know if it's true because he, Dvijamani, cited a text where it says that Madhav Mangal goes to the Kalpavriksha Vrindavan and asks for ladus to eat himself. And the Kalpavriksha is given the ladus.
Yeah, but that's
that happened to be the year that Lord Brahma
took
the counter poison.
I don't know.
Yeah, I think it depends. Oh, so if there's six systems.